Radio Netherlands presents Berlin's Jewish Renaissance. Lorenzo Bacino takes a look at the city's fast-growing and eclectic community.
The door of the Holocaust Memorial Tower in Berlin's new Jewish museum clicks shut behind me, so I can experience the feeling of isolation, emptiness, and disorientation within. A feeling the Jews who were being deported to the camps during the war may have felt, as the doors to the train carriage bang shut behind them, sealing their fate. But many doors are opening for today's Jewish community in the city. The Daniel Libeskind Museum, which houses this tower, has had over 100,000 visitors since it opened last year. For the past decade, Berlin has been beckoning Jews from all over Europe and beyond.
There is a new vibrancy in the Jewish life in Berlin, even now. And when you're Jewish, it's exciting to be in a city where there's not just one synagogue, but where there are four or five different synagogues you can go to for services.
Basically, Judaism means community and being together, solidarity, knowing everything about everybody. It's a very family-like thing.
It's fascinating, frustrating, exhausting. I love it. But we could really do with a couple of assistant rabbis and a bit more help now and then. Plus, of course, an extra 12 hours a day.
Before Hitler came to power in 1933, there were about 600,000 Jews living in Germany, 160,000 of them in Berlin. At the end of the war, only 5,000 or so emerged from the rubble of the destroyed capital. Since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, a steady influx of Jews has been heading towards the city, many of them from Eastern European countries, and most of all from the former Soviet Union. The community officially numbers some 12,000 members, a mere shadow of its former self, but at least the roots have remained in the very city where the annihilation of European Jewry was planned and executed. In the heart of Berlin, members of the Jewish community are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Jewish Cultural Center, the Kulturverein.
My name is Julius Schöps. I'm a representative of the Jewish community in Berlin.
In your opinion, what's the greatest challenge for Berlin's Jewish community now at the moment?
The Jewish community in Berlin is growing. And I think Berlin will be, in future, an important city in Europe, a point between West and East. And there is a chance also for the Jewish community and the Jewish population of Berlin.
The director of the Jewish Cultural Center is Irene Runge.
The Cultural Center started in East Berlin as a small, tiny little, more Jewish academic left-wing organization, getting together, social events, etc. With the immigration of Russian Jews, which we were very instrumental in push it through in the old DDR in February 1990, we started to become sort of a cultural center in Russian and German, and we started to grow.
It's a mixture what's going on here. There are a lot of problems between the people who are coming from East Europe and the German Jews who are sitting here and the Israelis. In the Jewish community, we have a lot of conflicts and struggles. But in future, there is a chance that there will be a new German Jewry again. But this is not the same Jewry like before 1933. This will be another Jewry, maybe with roots in East Europe. But I think we are on this way.
In the last 10 years, some 50,000 mainly Russian-speaking Jews have poured into Germany. They fled the Soviet Union following a rise in anti-Semitism. Most of them are well-qualified, professional people. Few speak German, though, making it hard for them to find satisfactory jobs. And because of their Soviet background, they have little knowledge of Jewish culture and religion. Annette Kahane grew up in East Germany in a Jewish communist family. This meant she wasn't brought up in the Jewish religion either. Coming to Berlin, she rediscovered her roots and found a sense of belonging. She works for the Regional Center for Intercultural Projects, an organization which gives advice to immigrants, also those from the former Soviet Union. She explained to me how Russian Jewish immigrants have to undergo a double or even a triple culture shock.
Their problem of identity is very complicated because they are defined only by something they are not. They are not Jewish because they are not religious. They are not Russian because they are Jewish. They are not German because they are Russians. So there's a big problem for them because you have to deal with everything at the same time.
Alla Kisilova came to Berlin from Moscow 10 years ago. She and her husband took advantage of the opportunity offered by the German government of being able to live in Germany as Jews. Also, they were attracted by the prospect of a better life and more freedom of movement. Reminiscent of many of Russia's Jews, Alla's husband wasn't able to find a job within his profession and subsequently returned to Russia. Alla, on the other hand, decided to stick it out and face the challenges.
First of all, the language, because I think the Jews coming from the Soviet Union, they are all well-educated people, and we want work here. We want to not only get money, get bread, but we would like to make something for this country. It's also very difficult to find people to contact, to tell the people, to tell the Germans how good we are, that we are not just coming here to get money from the government, that we want to do something.
So how did you do it? You work in radio and you do other things, I assume. How did you do it?
I started to learn German, then I went to different organizations, Jewish organizations, to Jewish Cultural Center, for example. And I didn't know, it happened, so that I started to work at the radio.
For the Jewish umbrella organization, the Jüdische Gemeinde, it's no easy task dealing with the needs of its diverse members. Russian and Ukrainian Jews now make up about 60% of the community. And one of the main concerns of the Gemeinde is that its members keep up the religious aspect of Judaism. But as Annette Kahan explains, most Russian Jews have other priorities.
For the Jewish community, the main point is to be religious. But most of them don't want to be religious because their roots are cut since 70 or 80 years for two or three generations. So this is very difficult for them to get on this life. And it's also an intercultural problem in the Jewish communities because there is a big tradition in Berlin, especially, of the conflict between Eastern Europe Jews and German Jews. And so there's coming up the old conflict, you know, from the members of the Jewish community that are living here since after the war or before, and now the new group of Russians. And this is very funny because the German, so-called German community, is not German at all. They are also immigrants from Galicia and DPs and so. But there exists this conflict, and it's very difficult for the Russians to become part of the system.
The eclectic makeup of Berlin's Jewish community certainly makes for an interesting and dynamic one. But the person who has to face all the ensuing conflicts and deal with all the different needs is the community rabbi. In Berlin, the liberal rabbi is Walter Rothschild. He comes from England and has been at the helm of 5 synagogues for the past 18 months, and it hasn't all been plain sailing for him.
It's been exceedingly hard work and absolutely fascinating and very, very rewarding in all sorts of ways. Of course, there are the usual frustrations and tensions one gets in any community. And I think in a place like Berlin, with the size and with the background of some of the people, they're stronger than in some other communities. But we have here, for example, a single Einheitsgemeinde, a single community with more than 11,000 members. We have six synagogues which use six different prayer books, have six different traditions, six different sets of rituals, with or without an organ, with or without a choir, with or without equal rights for women on the pulpit, on the bima. And this makes life exceedingly fascinating.
How do all these different elements in the community relate to each other?
That is really the $64,000 question. If anything, I sometimes find that the rabbi is one of the few people who can take an overview, because each of the other ordinary members of the synagogues tends to think of their own little synagogue or their own little club or their own little institution. It's natural, it's normal, I'm not saying it's wrong, but it does make life sometimes rather complicated. So, for example, if I go to Synagogue A 1 week and Synagogue B the second, people in Synagogue A accuse me of being unloyal, when in fact it's my job to be at Synagogue B. And if I say at Synagogue B, I quite like Synagogue A, they'll say, we don't like you, you're far too left or you're far too right wing or so on. So one has to be exceedingly careful, and that can be complicated.
Rabbi Rothschild sees his role as a bridge between Berlin and the progressive Jewish community, but he explains that the nature of the conflicts come from a number of sources.
I think there are two things, internal and external. Internal, Berlin divides itself still into Ossis and Wessis, those who are from the East Berlin or East DDR and those from the West Germany. I call myself an Aussie. I'm Ausländer, a foreigner, and that means I come neutral. So I come to this community with a feeling that it really does not matter to me in what part of the city people live. It really doesn't matter to me who was in the party in the olden days or anything like this. I come fresh. That, of course, has disadvantages, where Hannah has a lot to learn, but it brings many advantages. And so I see my role as partly to help to unify within the community.
But the community has never been unified in the last 50 years, so it's hard to imagine it'll just happen overnight. And in the meantime, Rabbi Rothschild is coming under fire from all sides, so much so that his future as the liberal rabbi in Berlin is hanging in the balance.
Well, one can never expect to keep 11,000 people happy all the time. So quite clearly, it's part of the territory. There's going to be a certain amount of stress. I have five synagogues to serve. In four of them, things are going really swimmingly at the moment. In one of them, there are problems. Not with everyone, with some. There has been a recent meeting of the members to argue, to debate, you know, what my future role there should be. The major arguments breaking out, not just about me or about my style or my rabbinate. There are different groups within the synagogue boards, and there are different groups within the community's executive. And it's very easy to become the football in the middle.
As an outsider coming to Berlin, I was finding it quite a challenge to get to grips with all the conflicts and strifes affecting the Jewish community. I asked Ronnie Goltz, who's been in Berlin for the past 30 years and is active in the cultural side of the community, to enlighten me.
The pre-war Berlin community was the shooting star of Reform Judaism. The whole history of Reform Judaism in the world was born in Berlin, in Prussia. And this community in the 20s was absolutely enlightened, liberal, open. You could be Jewish in any way you wanted to be Jewish. That is not the post-war history. The hardcore running this community still haven't got that open, international, enlightened approach at all. And they've still got the trauma of Auschwitz in their bones, whether they're survivors or second generation children of survivors. And that is the problem. Somebody like Walter Rothschild's coming from England, from a very democratic and liberal and open society, an easygoing society, a pragmatic society, which is very typical for England. He doesn't fit into the neat, tidy, no-jokes Berlin Jewish community.
Despite being the talk of the town and despite being under an enormous amount of pressure, Rabbi Rothschild is remarkably upbeat about everything. He remains dedicated to his community, eager to iron out any differences, and enthusiastic about his role as a rabbi.
It's fascinating, frustrating, exhausting. I love it, but I could really do with a couple of assistant rabbis and a bit more help now and then. Plus, of course, an extra 12 hours a day.
Debate and discussion all make for a vibrant community, according to Rabbi Rothschild. And what's adding to its vibrancy is also the upsurge of interest in things Jewish from outside. The Jewish cafes and restaurants springing up around town have become haunts for Jews and Gentiles alike. Music festivals and cultural events are attended from far afield. But for Berlin, there remains an ongoing dilemma, and it's this. Half a century after the war and the killing of 6 million Jews, how can past traumas be marked? And how can Germany move forward? Berlin, after all, is the city where the idea of the Holocaust was born. It's also the city which, for decades, had thrived on the cultural, scientific, commercial, and educational contributions of its Jewish population.
My personal opinion is that nothing worse could happen to Germany as a Germany without Jewish people, without Jewish culture.
Mr. Heinz Kallmann is a Jewish returnee to Berlin.
Of course, this culture was lost entirely during the war, and it benefited all those countries to which we immigrated into. And to bring this culture back is going to take many, many years, but there are signs that slowly but surely Jewish culture is coming back to this country. The fact that a Jewish museum is just about to open shows that Jewish culture is on the increase in this country again, and this is a very good thing.
On Mr. Kallmann's recommendation, I went to see this much-talked-about Jewish museum. Designed by an American architect, Daniel Liebeskind, a visit to the building is an extraordinary experience. The architect himself says his design is an attempt to use the memory of the past and to make that story relevant to the present, a metaphor which expresses the rich, tragic history of Jews in Berlin. But the museum also gives a sense of hope for the future. As yet, it's empty, but a guided tour is a must. The Garden of Exile is an important part.
Okay, although it's quite freezing outside, I asked you to walk there just 1 or 2 minutes for the experience. As I call this the axis of exile, I have to go up again, so it's difficult to get up. Opening the door and then you're outside. Take care while walking.
Well, I'm going outside into the freezing garden. And immediately it is very disorientating because the ground is sloping downwards. We're faced with huge stone pillars and you actually have to struggle to walk up. It's quite a chore, really. And there are just these huge imposing pillars, lots and lots of them.
The idea is that if you pass the door, you have made it. You saved your life. You are in exile, you left Germany, but what is expecting you outside? It's not a bright, nice garden. This disturbance that you can't really walk out there. It's this feeling that you don't know what's going to happen. How do you feel? Whom have you left behind? What's bringing the future? All those ideas. And you don't have to be Jewish to understand this, so the garden is dedicated to all refugees and all exiles all over the world through all the centuries. There's this door that leads to the memorial. The memorial is one part of the museum, and as the whole museum is dedicated to Jewish living in Berlin and in Germany, the focal point is still Berlin. This memorial is dedicated to the Jews who were killed, who were from Berlin. Making this point because there's still the need and still the plan to have the big memorial near the Brandenburg Gate, which is for all the Jews.
I'm standing near the Brandenburg Gate and I'm looking across at the plot of land where the memorial will be. As yet, nothing has been constructed. In fact, the whole project has been a bone of contention for the past decade. It's already taken 50 years for Germany to decide to build a national monument to the victims of the Holocaust. But the way things are going, it could take as long again before anything is built on the site. There are many conflicting ideas about the form the memorial should take, who it should be for. Should it only be for the Jews, or should it include all victims of the Holocaust? What should be built on this site, which is as large as a football pitch? Some people even fear it could become a wreath dumping ground for neo-Nazis. All this emotional wrangling merely emphasizes the persistent difficulties in coping with Germany's past. Mr. Heinz Kallmann, upon his return to Berlin in 1976, set himself a task. He goes to schools and churches to lecture both Jews and non-Jews about the past, and he thinks the controversy surrounding the memorial is no bad thing.
It's needed, and the controversy is very good because it makes people talk about it. I saw this site about a year ago, and I thought then that it was much too large for the purpose that it should serve. However, since then, there have been one or two structural alterations, or there are structural alterations planned in as much as they're going to put an information center into it. And providing this information center is large enough, comprehensive enough, and serves the purpose that it should serve, this idea is a very good idea. And for that purpose, this site is no longer too large.
No one other group that was persecuted to this degree in this fashion in an industrial form of killing. I mean, it set, unfortunately, a new standard for atrocity. Something like this had never happened, and to this degree, we certainly hope nothing happens again in the world. And for this reason, it really needs to be a separate monument.
Deirdre Berger is the director of the American Jewish Committee in Berlin. She welcomes any initiative on behalf of Germany to deal with its historical legacy and believes the country has made great strides in attempting to do so.
This is a very unusual monument. This is a country putting up a monument in honor of the victims. And this really doesn't happen very often.
We have enough memorials. There are the concentration camps. And they are also the memories which my generations have in their minds. But I think for the future generations, this memorial is very necessary. And the fact that it's been decided to have it in the government center, this is very important because people will more or less stumble on it when they visit the government center for whatever purpose. It should be looked upon as something that is not for my generations or the generation after me, but for the third and fourth generation to draw conclusions and learn.
Unfortunately, learning from the past and dealing with such a weighty legacy isn't something that everyone is prepared to do. A couple of years ago, comments made by a prominent German writer upon receiving a top literary award sparked an angry national debate. Martin Walser lashed out at the current approach to Holocaust commemoration in Germany. He argued that it was time to let Germany become a normal nation without constant public reminders of Auschwitz. Many people in the audience applauded, but some members of the Jewish community feared this reaction reflected the spread of neo-Nazi attitudes. Deirdre Berger.
I think that it was quite unfortunate that he said what he did at the time he said it. He said that Auschwitz was being used as a moral bludgeon by German intellectuals. And I think that's not fair. I think that the attempt to confront this history, to deal with this history, is laudable, and it is not laudable to attack people who try and do that in a responsible manner. It shows a lack of desire, I think, to deal with this issue on a personal level. Martin Walser has often said that he's tired of dealing with this issue. We know his personal feelings about it. But someone of his standing to say that at one of the most, during the award giving of one of the most important peace prizes in Germany, of course has an impact. And it was a signal to many conservative elements in Germany that if someone like Martin Walser says this, then it must be true. And it sort of confirms this concept that many have that the world is beating on the Germans, which is silly. There's no organized plot in the world to beat on the Germans. But there's very careful attention to see in which way Germans deal with this legacy. And that's not the way to do it, to say, let's leave it behind us. There are many ways to confront it and still to find new forms of dealing with the past, but not simply by shutting it out. That's the wrong path.
But can Germany ever be considered a normal country? Heinz Kallmann still has his reservations.
I don't think it is normal. As long as our chairman, Dr. Andreas Nachama, has to travel in a bulletproof car, as long as he has to be guarded day and night, as long as our schools are similar to some kind of prison where the security arrangements are very high, cameras everywhere, when these things cease and our people are able to visit the synagogue without being searched by the police before they enter the synagogue, and the police guards outside the synagogue and our other Jewish institutions, which we have, don't have to have police protection anymore, then perhaps one could consider talking about normal life for Jewish people.
So although a lot is being done to address the legacy of the past, for the older generations, much remains to be done. But the interest in Jewish life on behalf of non-Jews is a positive sign that the younger generations want to understand what happened and why. Julia Plessing is 29 years old and she's not Jewish. As a teenager in school, she developed a thirst for knowledge of her nation's past.
My first memories mainly on that topic is that I started to read a lot of novels about it, also written by Jews. I remember reading a novel by Elie Wiesel and also about young Jewish children in the Holocaust and so on. And I myself started to feel very guilty. I sort of, took over this collective sort of guilt because you are identified as the sons and the grandchildren of the ones who did it.
Clearly, Julia's attitude is reflected in other young people, as Heinz Kallmann feels relations with young non-Jewish Germans are improving.
For me, relations are strained with my generation. If I meet somebody who about my age, older, then of course there are strained relations. I try to avoid sort of going into conversation with him. If you talk to the younger generation, then I feel a bit more relaxed because due to the fact that I talk to them in schools, I got used to talking to them. So the relations between the youngsters and myself are quite good.
But according to Rabbi Rothschild, blame for the Holocaust is by no means purely a German issue.
I wish to make no apology for Germany. It would not be appropriate, it would not be relevant. I'm an Englishman working here. But what we've learned in the last few years from archives is that the Holocaust was a European phenomenon, not just a German phenomenon. That the Swedes and the Swiss and the French were just as involved as anybody else. That the British sent people back, that the Americans sent people back, that World Banks were supporting things. In other words, the difference between the guys in the black hats and the guys in the white hats has become much more blurred. There are so many debates going on now, and they're all important, but the average human being can't take them all in.
Being Jewish, for me, means more or less everything. Especially in this country, it's very, very important that the Jewish religion is being practiced, that it's being practiced openly, and I do everything in my power that I can to help Jewish life on its way.
The history here is so laden with ghosts, the ground is bloodstained all over the place. It would be foolish to deny that, and I feel that very strongly. But at the same time, one meets constantly people who were in the resistance. I mean, let's not forget the whole DDR ideology is based on communist resistance to the Nazi ideology. And it seemed to me quite normal to be prepared to work in a country where some was trying to come to terms with the past and to build the future.
Berlin's Jewish Renaissance was written and presented by Lorenza Bacino. Technical balance was by Rick Kingmer. This has been a Radio Netherlands presentation.